everyone. Welcome back again. This is episode number 14 with PT Forensics. Today we are discussing something a little different, I guess, from some of our other stuff. We've been jumping around to different topics, keeping it interesting, keeping it different. Today we will be discussing CrossFit. It's a big phenomenon going on right now in the fitness athletic industry. Been going on for a little bit now, actually. So it's starting to get out of that like new thing, I guess you could say, new fitness trend type thing, and sort of becoming more of like a mainstream type of program for a lot of people. So pretty interesting. So we'll be talking CrossFit. It is a debated topic, I feel like, especially in some of the, you know, rehab, allied health sort of fields. And so we'll be talking CrossFit, and then we'll be going into some sports performance, Olympic lifting type discussion. So a lot of little tiny areas, little nuggets to get to. But we're going to start off with a little bit of CrossFit. So with us today, we have our resident CrossFitter. That would be Corey.
Yeah, baby.
So, Corey, since you actively participate in CrossFit, would you mind giving some people an idea about what CrossFit is, what the draw, what the appeal is, what you like, maybe what you don't like about it, some of that type of info?
Certainly, Dave. So I started CrossFit in, I believe, November of this past year, 2017. CrossFit Good Fortune in Niantic, I'll give you a shout out. I went into it really, I've kind of always been wanted to do it. But oddly enough, you know, as someone who calls himself a movement expert, initially, I don't know, I don't want to say I was intimidated, but I just didn't know what to expect. You know what I mean? You know, you hear things from the people who've, you know, quote unquote, drank in the Kool-Aid about how great it is. And then you hear, you know, people who maybe kind of bash it a little bit. And, you know, take it all in stride. And I decided to start. And I'll tell you what, I actually very much enjoy it. So the whole basis of CrossFit is they're trying to take functional movements that we do every day, squatting down, pulling something up from the ground, potentially putting something up and overhead, and trying to make it about getting the biggest bang for your buck. So they also do, you know, not only do they combine Olympic lifts with potentially just some straight strength movements, but they also kind of add in the gymnastics component. So there is a little bit of bar work, kipping pull-ups, muscle-ups. And again, the idea is that even if you cannot perform, let's say, a strict pull-up without any assistance, there's ways to scale things, right? Just like any exercise, we can break it down, and maybe instead of doing a pull-up, you're going to do rows on a ring, you know, on hanging rings or something like that. push-ups, sit-ups, planks, again, they're all movements that I think most of us do, you know, outside of the Olympic lifts and the gymnastics stuff, but that's really what it's all based around. And you know, it's the conundrum is, you know, does a clean look like a functional movement we do every day? And, you know, at max capacity and under a ton of load, not really, but I mean, think about it. Do you ever have to pick up a bag of mulch off the ground and, you know, pick it up to your at least chest level, or maybe throw it over your shoulder? It could be something that's very functional for people. So again, I've been doing CrossFit for several months now. I hear what the haters say. I hear what the proponents say. I'm using it as a way of general fitness, that's generally how it is used.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's I think a big thing that, you know, you talk about haters. I think a big thing that the haters have with CrossFit is the idea that you're just getting people in the quote-unquote box, right?
Yeah.
So So you're getting people in the box, or the gym is the term in CrossFit. They call it a box, right? So they're taking people, bringing them in the box, and essentially what they're saying is, go take this heavy weight and go do an Olympic lift that it takes other people years to master and develop. And I want you to do this 20 times and then sprint over and then do these 50 box jumps and then do these ring pull-ups. And, you know, I think that's the idea, is that people dislike the fact that there's all this crazy amount of hardcore lifting going on, which can lead to injuries. So in your box that you go to, was there an intro course? Was there any instruction to begin with?
Yep. It's called a ramp on, or on ramp. I think I always say it backwards. And I'm pretty sure this is pretty universal throughout CrossFit, is there is an on ramp process where, you know, maybe you've had some experience in sports or in your, you know, in your life with doing a deadlift or a clean or whatever, and maybe you have no experience whatsoever. So what they're going to do for those first, I think it was 4 hour-long sessions, is teach you the basics of every movement. They're going to teach you what a squat should look like. And the nice thing about that is, for me, it was a very – I mean, so obviously I'm a little bit educated on some of these movements. But from what I've seen as well, it's a pretty small group that will go through the on-ramp together. And so you have a chance at least to look at their squat and say, all right, this person's squat looks good or it does not look good. Mm-hmm. And you can, you know, even as the CrossFit coach, you can start to break it down a little bit for them. Maybe it's an ankle mobility problem, blah, blah, blah. And you can work through your process there. But again, they're going to go through all these different movements, whether it's a squat or a hip hinge deadlift type movement or a push-up. And they're going to coach on it until you got it down right. From my experience, again, and very small sample size, right, I really only trained at one CrossFit gym, the coaching is pretty good. They do a good job of keeping you technical, keeping you thinking about the movement. And, you know, the hard part about it is people think, again, like you said, that you're going to just be throwing weight around all day long. But they actually do a very good job of scaling. And it's actually something I wasn't totally expecting, to be honest. But they do. They do a really good job of scaling things down to a level that you can complete. And let's say a movement is for time, right? So maybe they're trying to do, you know, something they'll use just every minute on the minute or something like that, or as many rounds as you can in a certain period of time. They'll give you an example of, you know, what you should be feeling in order to be getting the adequate work, right? And all I mean by that is, how much load is too load where you're not going to be able to make it through this whole time period? Yeah. And they'll give you ideas of how to get to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, definitely. I think the way I look at it is it's very similar to the question that I get often about what do you think about chiropractors, right? I get this question asked to me a lot by people, and I think it's the answer I give, I feel, is very similar for, you know, what do you think about CrossFit, or what do you think about chiropractors? And, you know, I think, like anything, if done correctly with right supervision and, you know, correct ethics and morals behind it, I think it could be a great thing, and it could be very useful for a lot of people. You know, I'm sure if we went around the country, we would find, you know, different places that, you know, didn't have that sort of level of supervision and everything. But again, you find that anywhere, right? You can find that in PT practices, right, where they don't have, you know, good, like, standards and things like that. So,
or any other sport for that matter, running, right, baseball, right, hockey. You know, if you have a coach who is not sound in, not necessarily, you know, biomechanics, but what a movement should look like, what a movement shouldn't look like.
Right. And I think, and I think it's just in general, you know, one of those things where when done right, it could be very useful for a lot of people. So with that in mind, I have a research article here discussing the incidence or the amount of injuries that occur in CrossFit athletes. So this is a study performed out of the Orthopedic Journal of Sports Medicine by Wiesenthal et al. From 2014. So essentially what they do, just their methodology real quick, they created a survey meant to identify injuries at CrossFit or among CrossFit participants. And it was sent to gyms throughout sort of like the Northeast region. So kind of like in our neck of the woods, a little bit in Connecticut, a little bit in New York, a little bit in Pennsylvania, all those areas. And the data was collected for a year almost. They accepted responses from these surveys. In total, they got 486 CrossFit participants who completed the survey. And 386 met the inclusion criteria. And the inclusion criteria was, the big one was, what defines an injury? Because that's the big thing, right? We want to look at, you know, does CrossFit have caused more injuries than others? So let's define it. So they defined it as, if you have a total removal from CrossFit training and other outside routine physical activities for more than a week, you have to modify your normal training activities in duration, intensity, or type for more than 2 weeks. And if there's any physical complaint severe enough to warrant a visit to a health professional. So, with our definitions in set, with our methodology understood, it was found that of those 386, 75 people, which is comes out to 19%, had experienced at least one injury resulting from a CrossFit workout in the 6 months prior to filling out the survey, that the people that met the criteria. There was no significant difference in injury rate across age, no significant difference in injury rate based on length of participation in CrossFit, so whether you're a 10-year veteran or a 3-month newbie. No significant difference in injury rate based on length of training session or days per week. There was a reduced injury rate in gyms that required a training period for beginners compared to those that did not. The most common injured body parts were the shoulder and the back. So I think you could take a few things from this study. One of them is just the pure limitations of it. It is a self-reported survey, meaning that, you know, the people in and of themselves, they defined what an injury was, right? They tried to set up a criteria for it here, but, you know, if you're a tough CrossFit guy like Corey is, you know, biting nails and drinking acid and things like that, you may not consider some things injuries, right? But again, I think it still gives a good tale of what goes on. It's at least a starting point. This was the best study that I could find. You know, there might have been new, more recent ones that came out that were more recent than 2014. But again, I think this shows some interesting things. One is that, you know, 19% of people experience injuries in CrossFit. From what this study said, that's pretty comparable to, you know, a general population almost. So it's very, very similar. Another interesting point, again, is that there was less of an injury rate in gyms that required training period for beginners compared to those that did not. And then it was interesting as well, I think, that the shoulder and the back were the two areas that really popped up a lot. Those were the most common injured areas of these injuries in total. So, you know, some good interesting points. And I think that goes back to our previous comments about how, you know, you really got to learn some of these lifts before getting into it, because, again, you're putting your body into positions that most likely hasn't been in, ever. And then when you take that and you add some serious weight on top of that, you could get injured pretty quickly. So it's a pretty interesting idea, topic. Again, overall with CrossFit, I think that when done right, it could be a very useful tool for people with fitness. And you know, I think one of the big draws to CrossFit actually is the community aspect to it. You know, you essentially have a family almost when you go in there. And I think for a lot of people that's a great thing.
Absolutely. And it can actually, like I said, I trained in one gym, but I've been in a couple other gyms, at least for a brief period of time. And the family atmosphere is definitely there. You learn the people that go there, you talk to them, you're going to work out alongside them. And there is that element of, pushing each other a little bit, which I think is a good thing. But again, you can find gyms that are much more competitive, let's say, than others.
Right.
So now you're getting to a point where, again, competitiveness is not inherently bad, right? We're talking about athletes here a lot of times. Of course, you got general population, but talking athletes in general, competitiveness is a good thing. But people get injured in sport as well. People get injured running. People get injured bending over to pick something up out of their yard. And the competitiveness, I don't think, is necessarily a bad thing, unless you are putting yourself in a position and not managing the load well enough, where potentially there is overload. And in an area where there's either overtraining, overload, or not getting enough recovery time.
Yeah, and it's something that I think needs to seriously be addressed. And almost, it's one of those things where at CrossFit, correct me if I'm wrong, but you sort of have your workout, right, that you kind of go through, and it's more of a general workout, and people can adapt it and change it as they see fit. But I think one of my little hiccups with CrossFit is the fact that it is a very generalized program, and that sometimes it takes the onus on the individual to modify or change what they're doing. Which I think that in itself could lead to some of these injuries that occur.
I think I would agree, and I think it's probably variable amongst gyms.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Again, the gym that I'm at, to give you a flavor of how a typical workout goes down in CrossFit. What happens is you're going to come in and they're going to talk through what you're going to be doing for the day, and then they go through a warm up process. And again, from someone who considers himself a movement expert, the warm-ups are usually pretty good. They're dealing with whatever motion you're dealing with for the day. So, if it's a squat-intensive day, you're going to be warming up your squat pattern. You're going to be warming up your hips. You're going to be getting your knees bent. You're going to be getting down low. And you're going to crawl before you walk, let's say. So after a warm-up process, what they're going to do is actually, for everyone, no matter how many times you've done it, they go through and actually have you do the movements with no load. So, for example, today I just got finished with a workout, and it involved clean power cleans and then a strict dip on rings. And again, someone who has no experience with that either might not know what I'm talking about or might not be able to do either of those things. Mm-hmm. So for the power clean, again, what you're doing is basically a deadlift combined with a second pull coming up to your shoulders, right? And there is that opportunity to kind of dip underneath the bar a little bit, so you don't need to restrict it all the way up to your shoulders. But then the dips, again, is going to be on the rings, having the rings up at your side, dipping down like a tricep dip like you would do on a bar or something like that, the rings being a little bit more unstable. Like I said, always ways to modify, but what they're going to start with is having you go through a power clean, let's say, which you would have went over in your on-ramp process, and they're going to have you either do it with like a PVC pipe or just a barbell, and you're going to work on the technicality of that motion. Again, from my experience, the trainer, the coach, whoever is there, is going to walk around, check everyone's power clean out, give you tips and pointers if you're struggling with certain parts of it. And then you're going to start to progressively load. And as far as dosing and managing how much to do, they do give you what's called an RX or prescribed workout. So they'll give a male and female weight, let's say, for the power clean. And if you happen to do that weight, then you RX the workout, right? So you did the prescribed workout, or you do it scaled. Of course, there's never really pressure or anything to have to RX the workout or anything. They want it to be scaled to the point where you're getting a bang for your buck, you're getting a good enough workout, but not overloading yourself.
Right, and I think that's a great like sum up of it, of sort of like the CrossFit process and the idea behind it. There were a couple terms that you mentioned there that I want to discuss because I like talking some of these topics that people may not understand or may not have even really heard before. So some of the things you had mentioned, you know, power clean, you know, deadlift, things of that nature. There are only two Olympic lifts. Technically, we're talking about people that go compete in the Olympics and perform Olympic weightlifting. Those two lifts are the clean and jerk, and the second one is the snatch. So if you are listening and you are saying to yourself, what the heck is he talking about? Let me break it down a little bit, because I think Corey and I have a little interesting conversation coming up regarding some of this weightlifting, some of this Olympic lifting type stuff. So the clean and jerk, again, to reiterate what Corey had mentioned, you're essentially doing a deadlift, which is you're taking a barbell with weight on it from the ground. You're lifting it up and you're getting into a clean position, which is essentially where the barbell, you take it from the ground, you lift it up, and then all of a sudden the bar is sitting on your chest, essentially.
It looks similar to a front squat at the end, like right, the position correct. You would be in when you are racked for a front squat.
Correct. And there's different types of clean. So there's the hang clean, which is you're holding the bar in your hands to start off with. There's the regular clean or the power clean that Corey had mentioned before. That's the one where the bar starts on the ground. And then the second phase or the second part of it is the jerk. And that is where you have the bar racked on your chest in the clean position. And then you take the bar and you press it over your head. You jerk it up, essentially. So that is one of the lifts, the clean and jerk. That is one lift. And then the second lift is the snatch. The snatch is a very complicated lift. Essentially, you're taking the bar, you're taking it from the ground, and you're lifting it directly over your head in a standing position. So you're pretty much taking every lift there is, and you're throwing it into one lift, one smooth transition lift. It's very difficult. Both of these lifts are very difficult. They take a lot of training. They take a lot of skill. They take a lot of athleticism, actually, to perform these lifts. I do not do these lifts. I haven't done them, since we did them in college for my sport that I played. And I don't know about you, Corey, but I had a very difficult time performing these and performing them correctly.
Yep, and again, like everything, like any sport, it definitely takes practice. It definitely takes a conscious cognitive effort to figure out what you're doing, because in the snatch, like you said, there's a lot of variables to control. Mm-hmm. When you do that first pull in a snatch. Again, the first part kind of looks like a deadlift, except that your arms are much wider.
Yeah.
And then when you pull it for that second half, you actually land in a squat. So you're landing in a squat with your arms overhead, and then you kind of stand and lock it out from there. And again, you know, let's talk physical therapy for a second. If you are someone who does not have good lumbar control, then a thing we commonly see is what's called a rib flare. So you might get in that catch position, and you might be in a position of extreme lumbar extension. And that's obviously going to be a no-no under heavy load. Like I said, again, from what I've seen, they've done a very good job of coaching people out of that, you know, reducing load if necessary, but also going over the movement. And the other thing is shoulders, right? We talked about shoulders as a big potential or an area that's commonly injured. And if you don't have sufficient shoulder mobility or shoulder stability, then getting into a snatch position with weight over your head is going to be very challenging for you.
Well, it's also very challenging because I think when you're doing a clean and jerk, or when you're doing like, you know, a shoulder press or anything like that, the weight is already in an ideal position, and essentially all you do is push it up in the air. And I say that, and I don't mean to belittle the movement, because it's a very difficult movement, but when you're taking the weight from the ground and you have to bring it over your head in one movement, you have to manage a lot of, you know, velocity and change in speed and direction. And it takes a lot to lift a weight, a heavy weight, from the ground. Then you have to drop your body underneath that weight with your arms straight, catch it essentially in an overhead squat position, and then stand up. It's very difficult.
Right. And think, if anybody's familiar with the SFMA, one of the movements they do there is the overhead squat. And there's a lot you can pull out of an overhead squat. And, again, that's one of the ones that they went in on the on-ramp for me. But if you're someone who performs a pretty lousy overhead squat, then I'd go ahead and say you're going to be want to work on fixing those issues, whether it's ankle mobility, hip mobility, lumbar stability, before you're adding a ton of load into a snatch.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, so taking it more from a PT, from a performance perspective, you know, again, a lot of these people that, you know, are skilled and strong and athletic enough to do these lifts and get to the Olympics, these are the you know, this is what they do. These are the lifts that they do. But, you know, if you're sitting there and you're a soccer player, a hockey player, a basketball player, if you, you know, like to do a lot of gardening, do a lot of yard work, landscaping, you know, if you're a construction worker, you know, you may be sitting there, you may be saying to yourself, well, what the hell? I don't care if I could take a weight and throw it over my head and get into a squat and everything. Like, I have to go and I have to, like, you know, kick a soccer ball, or I have to, you know, nail some nails into wood. I don't know, whatever people do. So I think the next discussion is with a lot of this. And again, you could spend, you know, hours and hours and hours breaking down actual movement patterns for these. But I think taking a step back and saying, what's the practicality of it? You know, what is that transferable skill, or that transferable, you know, performance that you get from these movements, and to improve, you know, what you do. So, I personally think that there is transferable skill. Corey, I'd be interesting to hear what your take on it is.
Oh yeah, for sure. I would say there's transferable skill in a lot of the movements. And again, like, the way I think about movements just in general is I kind of dumb it down. And, you know, when I think about it, and also when I describe it to patients, you know, let's talk a deadlift. I mean, that's one of the more functional movements that people tend to suck at, right? So that's one that people might bend over and pick something up incorrectly all day long. And of course, there's tons of ways you can bend over and pick things up. But if you're not correctly using the hip hinge and a little bit of knee bend and allowing for your, you know, your posterior chain to be advantageous and to be able to load up, then you're going to have trouble and potentially be in pain. But if we can teach you to hinge correctly, and I'm, to be honest with you, deadlift is something I use in the clinic all the time. You got to be able to bend over and pick something up at the end of the day. And loading the posterior chain and making it strong and being confident in your ability to contract the glutes and the hamstrings together and the lumbar erectors is totally a functional movement for any everyday person. But if you talk about something like a snatch or power clean, the practicality there, I think, is in the power aspect of the movement. Again, they're both pretty heavy posterior chain movements. And again, if that's an unfamiliar term, I'm talking about, you know, if you think lateral chain, posterior chain. Posterior chain is talking about all the muscles on the posterior aspect that are going to be more of your pulling muscles, let's say. So we're talking, again, lumbar spine erectors, glutes, hamstrings, lats. And if you can pull effectively, you know, think about anything throughout the day where you're going to be pulling. Maybe you're trying to pull a, you know, a piece of sheetrock off your truck or something like that. Or maybe you're trying to pull a patient, you know, across a bed if you're a nurse or something like that. All of your pulling muscles, being able to load them up effectively is advantageous. And to do it in a manner of CrossFit, again, is meant to overload in a way. That's the point of exercise in general, right? We're trying to overload that movement so that you can perform the movement more easily.
Yeah, and it's there's definitely transferable, you know, performance from these Olympic lifts to, you know, your sport or your athletic or your daily performance. I think there's an interesting article I read. It was a review. It was a commentary. So, you know, not no experimental research here, but a good review is by Young in the International Journal of Sports Physiology and Performance. From 2006, so we're going back a little bit, but I think it's applicable because he brings up some interesting issues. So one thing is, you know, if you are someone who, again, is a construction worker, is a police officer, you know, plays, you know, basketball for a living, there's two different ways you could train, right? So there's the way where you could train for your specific job, for your specific task or sport, right? So if I'm a police officer, I don't know, my ability to handcuff someone quickly and with skill without, you know, fumbling around or anything, that's a skillful movement. That's a functional movement for that person. If I'm a basketball player, what's my jump shot look like, right? And I think you can either spend your entire time working on those things, which some people may say that is the only way to train for functional tasks, is to do the task and to keep working on it constantly. And you could all, or on the other hand of it, you can work on getting stronger, getting more range of motion, getting flexibility, getting stability, all these terms that we constantly use. And there's this range, there's this gradient, right? On one side, you have extreme functional training, right? Shooting a jump shot, you know, hauling a ladder or something, or carrying bricks up a ladder, whatever it is. On the other hand, you have this strength training where you just, you know, do a squat all day long, you do a deadlift all day long. And what is that, you know, transferability between those two? And I think somewhere you have to meet in the middle. So you have to be efficient in your...
And it's strength versus skill is exactly what you said.
Right. And you, it's one of the terms they bring up is specificity, right? So specificity in training, and then taking that specificity, so that skill training, and adding on it that strength component.
Yep, and you know, just like exactly like you just said, you build a foundation before you build a house, right? If you're someone who's going to be playing a sport, let's say, you know, for example, I just had a soccer player today. She's going to be doing a lot of movements that involve jumping, landing, cutting, turning, and ways to train that are to train them specifically. But if that person doesn't have sufficient strength to be stable in those movements, especially in a manner that might be over the course of a 60-minute game, then they may falter because that foundational strength isn't there.
Right, and I think a lot of it comes down to not so much the movement, because I think you do have to practice the movement, right? I think that there is a very there's a very strong case to make for saying to someone, you have to practice your jump shot, you have to practice your soccer kicks, or you know, you have to practice that sort of stuff. But if you're going to improve it, the skill, you have to improve the other aspects of it. So it's important to be able to maximize this performance by adding on the strength component. So, you know, to make that positive transfer, you have to have some sort of equal go between these two things. And I think for myself, I'm a proponent of having that equal share, because one of the things that strength conditioning, weightlifting, all that stuff does is it creates an optimal, what we call a muscle activation pattern. So you improve your ability to neuromuscularly activate a lot of these muscles. So for example, like you had mentioned, if you are going to lift up a, you know, whatever it is, a bag of feed, you know, I had someone come in earlier today who works a lot with horses. So he has to pick up bags of feed, move them around and disperse them and so on and so forth. He has to squat down, pick up this bag of feed, which is 40, 50 pounds, and then carry it over to, you know, wherever he has to do it. So being able to activate your muscles correctly and get them strong enough to be able to do this motion is important. Yes, picking up a barbell in a deadlift is different from picking up a bag of feed from the ground, but you are utilizing what Corey mentioned. You are utilizing that posterior chain musculature in order to do that. And by strengthening and improving that neuromuscular connection between the two, you could greatly improve your performance in doing it.
So I have a little article here, and the question, the article is titled, "How Much is Too Much? International Olympic Committee Consensus Statement on Load in Sport and Risk of Injury." It's by Solegard et al., and it is from 2016. And basically what they do is reviewed evidence from a few different sports. Unfortunately, none of them are the ones we talked about. It's limited to a few sports, cricket, rugby, and football, which for them is actually soccer, and Australian football. And what they're looking at is they're talking about this concept of load, right? We keep mentioning load. And load is not only the weight, let's say, that you're using, but it's also the sets, reps, the intensity. It's also how many games do you have on your schedule. It's also how often are you working or working out. What, you know, maybe there's psychological load that's layered on top of that. You know, let's say maybe you're mentally fatigued, or you have other things going on. Your mind isn't on the movement or on the activity that you're trying to perform. And they're trying to figure out, you know, what is that point that you're loading yourself too much? And if there, I don't want to say anything bad about CrossFit, but if there's one thing that I've found from a subjective standpoint, is I can see the potential for overtraining in that many people who I talk to, they like to go every single day. And I don't think that's inherently bad. But if you're not managing the load and, you know, let's say you're doing a few heavy days in a row of posterior chain work, you're deadlifting one day, you're cleaning the next day, and you're doing maybe pull-ups or a snatch on another day consecutively, making a huge posterior chain load over 3 days can be something would be considered overtraining. What they find in this article is exactly that acute change in load from a relatively low load to a high load. And they actually advise for small changes, you know, in load where appropriate. But they also talked about the idea that you have to give enough time for recovery, right? When we're exercising, we're causing probably some subclinical tissue damage, which then responds to that, and it heals, and it starts to lay down new tissue, and you create strength through that. You're muscles are better able to contract. And again, if you're not allowing for that recovery time, if you're doing three heavy posterior chain days in a row, then that can be something that's overtraining. In this article, they talk about the acute to chronic workload, right? So they use it as a ratio, and they say the sweet spot is between like 0.8 to 1. So being that acute training load being relatively similar to the chronic training load. And any huge changes in that, a huge change to a much higher load in comparison to what their chronic load was predictive of higher injury. Again, this is a specific population, and in all of this, these folks are playing games in their sport, right? So some of the recommendations they're making are on the schedule. How many games do you have a week? How many games do you have in the year? And when you look at some of the sports, you know, that we're more familiar with, maybe in the United States, baseball, soccer, football, you start to think about load management. the baseball season is like insanely long. And, you know, talking about youth athletes, many of baseball players you might be seeing, they might be playing 12 months a year. They might be playing fall ball, then school ball, then, you know, spring ball, then they're playing AAU. And before you know it, they got 12 months of baseball that they're playing. And that would be something that's probably too much load.
Yeah, and then you know, you start getting into the early sport specialization for young kids now, and that's a big, heavily discussed topic right now going on.
Of course.
But that load management is key, right? And then being able to utilize a lot of these Olympic lifts or a lot of these just powerlifting movements in general to manage that load and essentially just strengthen everything to be able to accept a load like that is another valuable reason why it is so important and it can provide such a positive boost in performance for athletes for sure.
Now again, in my small sample size, I found that they actually do a lot of diligence to make sure you're not loading up the posterior chain too much or the lateral chain too much, and they mix up the movements so you're alternating pushes and pulls and that kind of thing. But you also have to be cognizant as the athlete or as the person who's exercising about what you're doing. Are you doing a lot of heavy days in a row? Maybe you're skipping around only a couple days a week, but every day you're doing a heavy deadlift or something like that. Again, the coaches that I've, or you know, the owners where they're designing the workouts where I'm at do a pretty good job of that, but I can see where that could probably go awry in other places.
Yeah, it all comes back to that load management, right? So it's almost like that the discussion we had about tendinopathy a while back, right? It all cycles back to that load management and being able to accept those loads and progress and as tolerated, right? So very interesting. I think this is it's an interesting topic. You know, it's talking CrossFit, talking Olympic lifts. What is that transferable skill that you get from doing these types of things, and how does it improve your performance? It's a topic that could be discussed and talked about for a while, and then you know you could break it down into specific lifts and the mechanics for the lifts. So it could go on for a while, but I think it's a good framework and it's a good starting point to have that discussion and get a sense of, you know, what are these movements and why are they important? Why are we doing them? And you know, it puts things into perspectives for sure.
And one quick thing I want to say is if you're a physical therapist out there who maybe doesn't know any of these movements that we're talking about, or maybe they want to just, maybe they have a CrossFit population that they see, or, you know, just an athlete population that they see, it's absolutely worthwhile to go out there and learn the movements. There's courses that exist that teach you the movements and how to break them down as a physical therapist.
Yeah, I think it's an invaluable type thing, and I don't believe that we should close ourselves off to it. I think we should embrace it, and I think we should appreciate the fact that people are moving and trying to do all these types of things, because in the end, we are movement specialists, and we should be encouraging getting out there and doing a lot of these movements. I think it's healthy in the long run. I think it's healthy.
You took the words right out of my mouth, Dave. You can't bash someone for getting out there and moving, right?
No.
We finally got this average Joe off the couch, and they're getting around, they're moving, they're trying hard out there. The last thing we should do is bashing these folks. Again, we're movement experts. I think the movements they do are safe if managed correctly, and we shouldn't be coming down on people for that. We should be helping them get back to moving.
Exactly, I think that's the direction that we're headed as a profession, and I think again we should embrace it and we should accept it, not from a sense of thank God these people are doing this so they're going to get hurt so I'm going to get business, you know, that's kind of like cynical.
Exact wrong mentality.
pretty cynical there. I think we should obviously embrace it for the fact of yes, we should appreciate movement when we see it. And, you know, if something comes up, then we help people out educate them a little bit and then keep them rolling along. I think that's the way to do it. So appreciate everyone for listening. This was a interesting topic. More to come on it for sure. We will have another episode coming up shortly. So hope everyone is listening and liking and listening some more. So everyone have a great night. This is PT Forensics.